since she's arrived with a very special guest, Carolyn Roshan, who is a surgeon in Hartford, who is affiliated with Hartford Hospital. And she's had experiences working in both the United States and Canada, and how the differing health care structures affect practices.
And Dr. Roshan is at our Touchpoints Rehab
right
interview
here.
Chair. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. Thank
good
you
morning.
For having me.
Great to have you here.
Explain to our audience in general terms what some of the differences are as far as health care as provided in the United States versus Canada.
So I like to think that's a great question, and you know, people are so worried about health care now. They often, you know, will come up and ask me the question or ask me which system is better. It's hard to say, but if you think about it in terms of keywords, the key word for the American system, in my opinion, is excellence in care. We have world-leading care here for any disease, and it's a source of national pride. You know, the American system is a system that really excels in any disease. The Canadian system, the key word is universality. Canadians have universal health care, and it defines them. They take pride in that everyone who is a citizen or permanent resident is covered, and that they will have access, and no one can have better access than someone else. So somebody who's wealthier cannot bypass the weight, cannot get a better room, cannot have any differences in care than somebody who is at the bottom of the income grade. So these are the greatest system, the greatest differences, I think, between the U.S. and Canada. Universality is great, but it does come at a cost. Canadian system is rationed, and we're talking about that a little bit before.
Yeah.
It's rationed by need, I like to say so. When I was finishing my fellowship, I was told, oh, please come back to Canada. We'll offer you a job where you can operate half a day every 2 weeks. So very quickly after you start seeing patients in clinic, you got to book their surgeries 3 months out, 5 months out. And so people have to wait for their health care, and that's how the government...
They have to wait for surgery?
They have to wait for surgery. They, you know, if they need an emergency surgery, they'll get it. But the time between the time that the patient will see, let's say, a surgeon and get their breast cancer surgery, colon cancer surgery, is much, much longer than in the United States. A hernia surgery can have enormous delays because people will try to book cancer surgeries and emergent surgeries a little bit earlier. So an elective gallbladder surgery, a need for joint replacements will all have very long wait times in Canada.
How long?
Difficult to say. It varies by province. It does vary by regions within the province. But, for example, my mom needed a knee replacement, and she waited 9 months.
Nine months.
But here, you know, I think if you come to Hartford Hospital, you can get your knee replacements within a few weeks of meeting with the surgeon. So,
what about the cost? How do Canadians pay for their health care?
So Canadians get a little bit of a hidden cost, you know, which I think is misleading. So Canadians are very highly taxed, much more than the Americans, and their provincial taxes and federal taxes. And those taxes are taken off of people's paycheck right away. And it will not really say this much for health care, this much for the roads. It will just say federal and provincial taxes. And, you know, an average income family will be taxed around 55% of their total paycheck. And the examples I get, you know, so they will not really see how much is going to their health care. But if you think of a couple, you know, two individuals, no children, making about $60,000 each, so total household income about $120,000, they will pay somewhere around $37,000 a year for their health care.
$37,000 a year.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that's a lot. But they don't see
it. They
have a riot
here in
this
country.
They don't see it.
Yeah.
They don't see it, right? They it's just taken out as income tax.
Right.
Government income tax. So the cost is certainly there, and then to have all this cost for a service that is, you know, really not the same as the American service. So I think that this excellence in care that we have in the United States is I'm very proud of it to say that we offer such outstanding care. But the lack of universality that we have in the United States, the enormous amount of uninsured, that is a little bit of a source of shame. You know, it's a little embarrassing to see so many people in our country be so highly uninsured.
How are there folks that you work with, I mean, that you talk amongst yourselves, how we could lick this problem so that everybody could be
insured?
Insured, or is it going to be the Canadian way, the only way?
I hope not. I think that, you know, we, although I'm from Canada, we recently became American citizens. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And speaking about that with my husband said, you know, we're Americans now. Let's think big. Like, why should we choose? Why can't we have a universal system that also provides excellence in care? And the truth is, there's no country in the world that's been able to do that. Should we be the first? We've been the first in many things. Why not this? I'd love it if we could be the first. So I think some of the key factors that you need in order to keep excellence while provided universality would be things like you need to keep this private dimensions. You know, in Canada, hospitals will be given an annual budget, and the government will say, here you go, spend it wisely. So if I'm a highly performing surgeon in a Canadian hospital, I'm eating up the hospital's budget, which makes them dislike me.
Right.
When I work at Hartford Hospital, if I'm an excellent surgeon, I drive a lot of business, a lot of patients want to come to get my services, I make my hospital better. And that is a good system because it incites hospital to provide good care, support good care for the patients because it makes them better. So that dimension, I believe, would need to stay. So the idea that everybody is insured and they carry their health care insurance is like a credit card that gives them wealth, and they can bring this wealth to different hospitals who are incited to providing this good care would be a great way to start, I think.
Health care, yes, the big issue, and we're delighted to have live right here in our studios this morning Dr. Carolyn Roshan, who's with the Hartford Hospital, and the difference.
Brad, joining us in our Touch Points Rehab Interview Chair, Dr. Carolyn Roshan. She is a surgeon at Hartford Hospital. She went to school in Canada. She is from Canada, explaining to our audience the difference between Canadian health care and health care in the United States. So, Dr. Roshan, do you think that this country can develop a plan, meaning the United States, where you have the coexistence of a private sector plan with universal health care?
I think we can. Of course I think we can. I think that we've achieved a lot of harder things. You know, we've been to the moon. We can find a way to provide health care to everybody who lives in the United States. It will come at great cost. You know, health care is expensive. There are some, I want to call them nasty words, you know, that the American public will have to accept if they want to move towards something that's universal.
Such as
government involvement in managing some of the health care and regulating. For example, big pharma is a big problem in the United States. The cost of medications is one of the highest in the world. And so starting to have some involvement of the government in capping how much some medications can be, how much some pharma can charge the patients for medication costs, how long a patent can be before medications go generic. These are areas where other countries have started to have some government involvement in legislations, and the United States is a little bit more lax and a little bit more in favor of supporting pharma. Pharmaceutical companies need to make a profit. That desire for profit drives their desire for R&D, which then provides us with some of the breakthrough in some of pharmaceutical innovations that have led to a lot of cure rate in our country. However, there needs to be a cap, you know, where we can find a middle ground where they get a profit and we get our population healthy.
And you know, Doctor, this is true. This is where we meet the tough decision to make.
Correct.
Because in this country, when you mention government and health care, people go crazy.
It is. It's difficult. And I see people who need to accept. We'll need to choose. I mean, at some point, if you just let the pharma companies rule, they will continue to do what they're doing. And that might be okay for some, but it will continue to have the impact of leading to a lot of patients, a lot of of Americans not having access.
Isn't government already involved in many respects, though? The states will say, this is how much money you're going to get under Medicaid. Or if the hospital charges for a particular procedure under Medicare, the state says, well, or Medicaid, this is how much we're going to give you.
Correct. But in that regard, they only act like, you know, a private insurance company will do the same. They'll say, we'll be in network with you, and so we'll recommend all of our patients come to your hospital, but we'll give you this much. So in that regard, you're right, the government is involved, but they're acting the same way that different insurance companies are acting in regimenting the people that are insured under them. They're negotiating prices of reimbursement directly. So they're already doing that. Should they be doing that in a greater scale? CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, certainly is playing a role, and a lot of insurance companies will follow their lead. And so to extend that through legislation probably is not far-fetched, and I agree with you, certainly is a great place to start.
Do you believe, with all of the controversy over this, and we hear it, Dan and I hear it practically every day, that we can get to a system, and I'm talking about those that don't have anything. You know, I just had something on this morning before 6 o'clock, that there are people that get these cards, of course, to go buy things, okay, and what they do, they go and buy the groceries with the cards, okay, and then they sell the groceries that they've just bought to make a big profit.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, how are we going to stop that? That's what's got to stop before we have anything.
Yeah, I agree. So abuse, you know, we got to find out what's the true percentage of abuse of the system, because that's where people feel robbed. And then people who have the power to pay decide that they will not give that power to those who cannot because they're afraid of abuse. So we have to identify the percentage of abuse and how we can better regiment it and surveil it. But again, surveillance, you got to decide if it's a small percentage of abuse and it will cost millions to regiment it. You know, is it worth, which one is worth, you know?
Right.
It's like poetry. It's never black and white. It's gray. It's somewhere in the middle. Mm. And there are difficult questions, there are difficult choices, and nobody has the good answer. But I think that as we talk as a society and we start to define what matters to us, instead of continuing to highlight what separates us, if we start to highlight what matters to all of us and then works towards getting that, I think we'll find the solution.
I don't want to get you in trouble with our political leaders, but in this country,
why not?
whether we're talking Connecticut or the national level, are our leaders being forthright with the public when it comes to health care?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think that healthcare is very complex, and it's hard to be forthright. It's difficult because it's so complex. If you want people to understand these concepts, you need to cut down a lot of the information. I do believe that some of the leaders may be cutting down too much. One of the things that scares me with the talk of the American Healthcare Act is this whole idea that, for example, patients can choose their plan. Don't worry. Go right ahead. You can have the freedom to choose your plan. To me, it's a vocabulary that hides the fact that we can now let some companies offer some plans that really are not healthcare plans, that really cover nothing. You know, as a provider of a highly specialized care, at Hartford Hospital, I often feel that some of my patients purchase some insurance and then come in front of us and we have to tell them, your plan does not cover the specialized health care. And they're surprised by that, but they were sold some very, you know, inadequate plans.
Now, are you talking about Obamacare? Or
no, Obamacare has rectified that.
Okay.
And since Obamacare, we see that much less. People have to have some plans that are adequate and comprehensive. Mm-hmm. And when other leaders are saying, you know, with the American Healthcare Act,
the plan that was passed by the House.
That's right. Okay. The plan that was passed by the House, you'll have freedom again. That scares me because that freedom comes with plans that are not comprehensive.
Less coverage, high deductibles.
Right, pre-existing conditions being declared. And so what the people will face is an unexpected disease and then realize that they're not covered for that.
Wow.
You know, in transplant, we see that, and it's heartbreaking to see some patients just not being able to access this care that we can deliver, but they just never had the plan for. And so to go back to your question, this is these are areas where, you know, hidden behind this freedom of choice of your plan sort of discourse is really patients are buying a plan that might give them great disservice if they ever truly become sick.
But the big problem we hear with Obamacare is particularly the young who were counted on to pay into the system, opt out, and choose to pay the fine, and that's not enough to support the system.
Correct. So these are difficult. Again, I'm not a politician.
Right.
I'm very happy with my career choice.
You're smart.
Are difficult. These are difficult questions. But sometimes I think, you know, why wouldn't we start thinking about healthcare the same way we think about a life insurance or a disability insurance, per se? If you buy it when you're 20 and you're healthy, you get a lower rate, and then you're going to pay that fixed rate your whole life. They're able to do that with life insurance.
There you have it.
They're able to do that with disability insurance. And then, so if you only, if people are insured by their employer all the way through their career until they're 65, of course now when they're 65, they retire, the health care plan they had with their employer is gone. They now get to purchase private insurance. Of course that's high, because we know that once you're 65, you start to have more health care needs than when you were 20. And so why can we think of some system where you pay it when you're 20, you keep that rate your whole life, and it follows you no matter your career? That could also help a lot of patients like my husband, who's starting his own business. You know, it's easier to be your own boss and be free of an employer.
You're not talking a health savings account now.
I'm not talking.
What?
Well, I'm talking about whatever plan you want to
pay.
If you had the idea that you purchase this when you're young and you keep it. So you're right. Right now, the young are opting out and paying the fines. But if we didn't let them, and we let them keep that rate their whole life, maybe they'd be incentivized to pay it.
There's an idea.
Interesting.
I don't know the answer.
We can go on and on, Doctor.
We could talk for hours.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks.
Thank
you. We're going to have you back.
Okay, yes. I'll be back.
Awesome.
I'm French-Canadian.
Great.
You invite me, I come.
Good.